Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, rampant Rangers smash 5 past a miserable Motherwell. St Mirren can find themselves to a 5th consecutive defeat. And is the clock ticking on Scottish football's lower leagues? I'm Andrew Slavin, and joining me from The Telegraph, we've got JJ Bull, and we've got Motherwell senior content creator, Laura Brannan. How are you both?
Hello.
Hi, Andrew. I can't really hear you over the jangle of my foot golf winner's medal.
Oh, mate.
Can you hear the jangling?
All I can hear is the jangling of the broken bones in my left foot after that foot golf incident. Yeah, no. For anyone who doesn't know, me and JJ played foot golf last week. I almost broke my ankle, and JJ won. So, yeah. Congratulations, JJ.
He fell over while playing 2v2 in the rain. Anyway,
is your ankle still purple, Andrew?
It's almost black now. A lovely shade of hue.
It looks like you ruptured your ligament or something. It's a bad one. Anyone who's played five-a-side knows what that feeling's like.
My friend said, I've broken my ankle and that looks worse. As in mine. But anyway, let's talk about the Scottish Premiership. And I'm going to start with a very important question. We're now in September. We're almost at the end of September. But are Rangers going to win the league title?
They might.
They're playing very well, as are Celtic. The reason I ask, I mean, as much as Celtic are winning and are on better form, against Rangers, the Rangers seem to just be playing a bit more attractive football, a bit more exciting football than Celtic are particularly. But I'm going to stay on the fence, JJ, but I want you to tell me what you think.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. And Celtic are getting slagged off for being useless, but as soon as they win their game in hand, they'll be above Rangers and it'll be tight all the way through. I'm not going to change what I've said all season. Celtic are probably going to win it, but it's going to be really tight. Rangers are a lot better than I thought they were maybe going to be. I knew they'd be close, but they look great. We should talk about them, though. Yeah.
I mean, this is just purely on the basis that Motherwell don't win the league, by the way.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough.
Obviously.
Well,
obviously.
Let's quickly move on away from that, Laura. Because on the show, we're going to be speaking with the Stenhouse Muir chairman, Ian McMenemy, about the fate of clubs below the Premiership. But before we get there, let's get some football chat.
For the rest of this month being September 2020, you can take out a subscription to The Athletic for the frankly ridiculous price of just £1 a month. That's unrivaled football writing and analysis from the very best people in the business, a brand spanking new breaking news service, and ad-free versions of each Athletic podcast, all for just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com/Scottish Show to get started.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Here's Etienne. Oh, wow, what a goal! The first Rangers goal for Cedric Etienne. And it comes in spectacular fashion. Last past Carson. And Rangers have a 4-0 lead at Fir Park.
So we're going to start with the game that you don't want to start with, Laura, which is obviously with Motherwell against Rangers. It was Motherwell 1, Rangers 5, Tavernier with a double, Itten with 2 goals as well, and Jordan Jones also got onto the score sheet. So Rangers were back to winning ways at Fir Park. But there was a consolation goal after George Edmondson scored into his own net from his heat. He had no idea about it, but it was quite funny. I do like goals like that. But what's Gerrard got right with his squad going into this game? Or was it just a little bit about Motherwell kind of feeling the effects of travelling from, what was it, Israel? They were in the midweek, wasn't it? A tough game, wasn't it, Laura? Were you out there?
I was out there, yeah. It was a different experience. It was a great experience, to be honest. One that you don't normally get with a club like Motherwell, so it was great in that sense. I don't think anyone's blaming the travelling or the European fixture in any way, though, in terms of the result against Rangers, because let's face it, Rangers are in the same boat. They had to play on Thursday night as well, and they had to travel home from a away game as well. So in terms of fatigue in that sense, Rangers were suffering in exactly the same way. So no one is blaming the European game for the heavy defeat on Sunday. It's just kind of an unfortunate catalogue of events, really. It's kind of went against us at Fir Park on Sunday, and really just didn't turn up. We weren't good enough, and Rangers were just far too strong for Motherwell.
You say nobody's blaming the travelling, but you did hear from Stephen Robinson, manager, say that they looked tired compared to Rangers. I mean, is that just quality showing through rather than tiredness?
I think it could be a mix of things. Like, I mean, as I say, no one's blaming it, what happened on Thursday, but you've got to take into account, I mean, the boys are playing in 25 degree heat at 8, 9 o'clock at night. There was like a 6-hour flight there and back. So there is that element to it. But also, Motherwell don't have a squad to play in Europe. We don't have an extensive squad where we can rotate as much as teams like Celtic and Rangers do. So you are pushing these players to play, it was like 4 games in 2 weeks, so it's a lot for these boys. So there is that element to it, but we don't want to use that as an excuse. So it's definitely some part of that has crept in, and it is taking its toll. And I dare say the international break that's coming up will be welcomed for the sense of these boys that have been working so hard with the European games over the course of a season. If we had qualified for the group stages, I dare say there would have been a lot more money thrown at the playing side of things to get in more players, so that we could have went through more, like, kind of cycled the players a bit more in terms of changes and things like Celtic and Rangers do. But it's by no means the reason that the team are using as an excuse for losing 5-1.
Well, you rightly pointed out that Rangers were in the same boat, and JJ, Rangers were ruthless in this game, particularly James Tavernier, who just seems to be, I think he's having the season of his life right now. He had the most shots in the game. Obviously, he got 2 penalties, which I think were kind of debatable, but how do you sum up Rangers' performance?
Well, I'd start by looking at something I've noticed with Motherwell's team sheet. When you have it written down, you have Tony Watt and Callum Lang up front. So T Watt and T Lang is twatting clang. That's very why I was nice. Laughing earlier when we were on this Zoom call. I noticed that. I can't have never noticed that, twatting clang. Anyway. Rangers, I think they just had better players, man for man. I agree with what Laura's saying about recycling players and giving them rest, but I don't think it really matters. Rangers are just a much better team, much better players. They would have beaten anyone that day, and they look good. They had their fullbacks getting really high. Bassi came in for Barisic, did very well on the left. Tavernier was working really hard off the ball. I think he was trying to show Jones what he should be up to as the high press. There was a bit where he started pressing the goalkeeper in his own box, and he's a right back because they're still playing a back four. And Davis has been good this season in the holding role. They just look really decent. They look really well organised, and they've got pace where they need it, and they are good combination play. They look good. Tavernier, seasons of his life. Didn't he score like 15 penalties a couple of seasons ago?
Well, yeah, he is penalty king for Rangers. Yeah. But it just seems to be like he's always been a threat going forward. But it seems like a lot is clicking for him, even in open play for certain assists and just. The way so much of Rangers' play seems to be going down, you know, the left and right hand sides, but he's the captain, and he's, you know, you can't dispute the fact that why are Rangers playing so well? Why did Rangers have such a great start defensively and in attack? It wasn't that long ago, it was his 250th appearance for the club. So there's a lot to say about Tavernier's impact this season for them.
I would say that I know we joked about it at the start of the show about Rangers going to win the league and stuff, and I know we were just having a laugh, but I would say out of the teams that Motherwell have played, that is by far the best team that we've come up against this season. And we have been away to Celtic as well, but I feel as though Rangers didn't have to get out of gear anywhere near as much as Celtic did against us. And I don't necessarily think it's a criticism on how Motherwell played in either game. I think it's more in terms of how Rangers played. They are just a very, very good team. As you're saying, everything's clicking for them right now. And I can see them really challenging right up until, at least until right at the end of the season, if they're not going to win it. So they're so strong. So yeah, I would say it's definitely the best team that Motherwell have played against.
Yeah, really strong, especially when you see the likes of Cedric Kitten coming into the side, scoring goals now. They've got more strength and depth, but they welcome Galatasaray, which will be a tough tie at Ibrox on Thursday in the Europa League playoffs. So if they win that, they can go through into the group stages, whereas Motherwell are going to travel to Kilmarnock, who are also having a pretty good couple of games. But we'll move on. We're going to talk about Hamilton against Dundee United. It was Lawrence Shankland back in the score sheet, but it wasn't enough for United after Hakim Adolphin scored with 15 minutes to go, which got Hamilton a point. But Mickey Mellon was
pretty,
well, 3-5 now, I think, for Adolphin, and he's a centre half I'd be pretty happy if my centre-half was chipping in with as many goals. I think he's the top goal scorer now as well. But Mickey Mellon was pretty bullish in his post-match interview, saying, with the quality of players we have, I would back them to the hilt to put them away. Speaking of Hamilton, on another day, we'll take them. But if you look at the kind of the match stats, match reports, it was 12 shots apiece, and there was only one shot, well, three shots on target. I think the Hamilton keeper only had one save to make. Well, two, if you count the goal. But it wasn't as clean cut as Mickey Mellon's kind of making out. I get why he's bullish, but at the end of the day, Hamilton just seemed to have this Hamilton spirit, as Brian Rice calls it, where they're just able to get back into games. But what do you think, JJ, about Hamilton's spirit?
Well, I believe it's a spooky spirit that powers their football. And I don't know what I'm talking about. This game is a... There's a lot of games that happen this weekend that basically just two teams cancel each other out, and I think this is kind of one of them. I mean, your goal... A Dolphin scoring from a set piece again, which is the only way Hamilton seems to score now, is their centre-back goes up and scores it. The goal that Shanklin scored is well worked, really well done by Chalmers on the right. He had to work really hard to pull away from his man. But most of it is a bit of a battle in the midfield. Both teams sort of exchanging possession. No one really in control of it. Any team could win it. It is a total dice roll of a match. I mean, that score could have been anything, this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was one of those where Hamilton definitely, if they're allowed enough set pieces, they're gonna hurt you. Especially when you have the ability that David Templeton has from a dead ball situation.
I like Mickey Mellon. I think he's come across well so far in like the interviews he's done. I think the way he kind of dealt with, he was having a good laugh and joke about Lauren Shanklin coming back from injury. I think when he spoke about Connolly as well with the sighting with the SFA, I thought he was quite strong. I think he's quite straight to the point as a manager. I kind of like the way he speaks. But in terms of the actual performances, I think maybe he's kind of getting a wee bit, kind of get a wee bit of heat from the fans just now. United should have had this game wrapped up in about the first 10 minutes. They need to be more clinical in front of goal. I think I spoke last week about them kind of just not being sharp enough, really. And I think it kind of showed again. There's not really that kind of creative spark. Once you kind of take Shankland out of the reckoning, who have they really got that's a game changer right now? I don't think Nicky Clark's doing enough. So I think he's been coming in for a bit of criticism. And it's just kind of what looked like a kind of promising start for them. It's the last couple of weeks, it's just kind of got worse and worse. And it must be a really frustrating time just now for United fans.
A lot of problem with it is that last season they were better than lots of teams, and now they are the same amount of goodness or slightly worse. So they can't play in the same way. And also they've got new managers, so they're playing in a different way as it is. But it's just, they can't play the same way as they last year. So that it's maybe not that they're not doing enough. They just can't. They just don't have it in them. It maybe take a while to get used to it. It's difficult. Where's the creativity come from? But then I think you have to have control of the game, and they're not doing anything like is totally obvious with the way they approach games. They're just going into it, trying to win their individual battles and win the game. And
I think that sums up Mickey Mellon perfectly. I mean, he's always been a manager who lets the players do the talking on the pitch. He doesn't really, he simplifies a lot of things in training, and he simplifies how the game should be played. And you're absolutely right, JJ. It is all about just winning second balls, getting it into the box and relying on quality up front. That's kind of how Mickey Mellon's always set his teams out at Tranmere Rovers and at Shrewsbury. But it's not working out. And maybe it is that Hamilton spirit. They're always such a positive team, particularly with Brian Rice. But Hamilton take on Hibs next at Easter Road on Friday. Plenty of games on Friday, actually. Dundee United are also playing that night against Livingston at Tannadice. But next up, three's a magic number for Aberdeen and Celtic.
This season, the Premier League's going to be a little different. But at Paddy Power, we're trying to look at the upside. Avoid unnecessary journeys. That's Fulham's trip to Anfield off. Self-isolate. Some midfielders do that very effectively. Avoid European travel. Shouldn't be a problem for Everton fans. When you think about it, not that much has changed, really. New normal, same old football. Just like Paddy Power's Acca Cracker. Get a free bet if one leg of your 4+ fold Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it, totally ad-free, via The Athletic.
Aye, two penalties from Lewis Ferguson and a goal from Marley Watkins saw Aberdeen back to winning ways at Dingwall. Ian Vigers was sent off for the hosts for a trip on Ross / Rory McCrory, as we like to call him. But JJ, it seems like Aberdeen have had quite a few penalties this season.
Well, that's how Sam Cosgrove was getting most of his goals last season. The old penalty-a-roo. That's how you get players forward, and that's what you do. Oh, I didn't mean to rhyme, but that was good. Did you hear that one?
I'm a fan of your rhymes.
Yeah, anyway. Well, one thing that's going... How Aberdeen getting so many penalties is one of the questions we've got written down here. But so Aberdeen have gone from a team where it wasn't really sure what they were trying to do for a while, tactically. But they are now the team with the third most average possession in the league and are, I think, starting to learn how to control games. Motherwell was a bit of a blip, I think. I mean, there's... That really poor start didn't help them at all. But this game against Ross County, the system allowed them to totally dominate the game. Ross County just barely even turned up. And then there's really nice combination play. Same sort of stuff that we saw against Sporting Lisbon in the week. Aberdeen were really good in that game as well. But an early mistake, just like against Motherwell, was how they let in that goal. And had it not been for that, it might have been a different outcome. I mean, they were a much better team, Sporting Lisbon. Can't feel like... But yeah.
Well, they had their full team out, wasn't it? We discussed it last week. Perhaps their team would have been affected by the amount of positive coronavirus cases they had, but it was a full squad, so maybe 1-0 was a decent result for Aberdeen in a way.
Yeah, but we're on about Ross County now, though.
Stuart Kettlewell called this their worst performance of the season so far.
It was one of those where it was not only their worst performance, but it was one of Aberdeen's better ones. So... it's one of those, if a team doesn't turn up and the other team does, they're going to be in trouble. I mean, the two penalties, Aberdeen could have scored 4, 5, 6. They really were in total control of it. I don't think Ross County really caused them any hassle whatsoever. And again, Ross McCrory is next level. Like, he is of a different bottle. He's so good, man.
Well, they put him back in midfield rather than right back.
Well, play back in midfield. It's the better, when they play Ferguson and McCrory in that midfield, it's so much better. It's more organised, more composed. And then you've got Scott Wright playing as a 10 behind Hedges is playing quite far forward next to Marley Watkins, and that's working really well. And it's all combination play and rotation of positions. So like this thing, you've got players who play different plates. So you can have Hayes on the left. In this game, Hedges started on the right. McGinn played up front, but then later on you can bring on different players to change it. But a lot of the players are interchangeable. Makes it quite exciting and unpredictable, which is something that we haven't really had for a while.
So, Laura, where does this leave Ross County? Because they seem to start the season so well, but now it's really kind of a mixed set of results for them. And it's difficult for Kettlewell to lift a team when it was just such a dire performance from them at the weekend.
Yeah, I've been quite disappointed at Ross County, actually, in recent weeks. I thought they were going to be quite a good challenge this season when the kind of campaign started, but I'm starting to think it was just maybe a kind of strong opening couple of games for them. They've won one game in 7, and that was against St Johnstone. And let's be honest, everyone's beating St Johnstone right now, so it's nothing really to shout home about. The game against Aberdeen, they had no shots on target. And I know, JJ, you're saying it was such a good Aberdeen performance that it could just be completely unlucky that they've had a bad day the day Aberdeen have had such a strong day. But you can't be having no shots on target. That's And the thing is, what's more concerning is they're not the only team this weekend that had no shots on target. And it's disappointing from a neutral perspective to see those games happening where there's absolutely no competition there whatsoever.
Ross County travel to Ibrox. They take on league leaders Rangers next Sunday. Well, Aberdeen host a very struggling St Mirren on Friday night. Celtic keep the pressure on Rangers after their 3-0 win over Hibs at Celtic Park. The goals keep coming for Celtic. Callum McGregor, Albion Ayeti and Mohamed El-Younoussi on the score sheet this time. Celtic have been facing a lot of kind of criticism with their style of play, but Neil Lennon said that this was certainly the best performance of the season, and he said out of his two periods of Celtic that this is a 10 out of 10 performance and one of the best he's witnessed. I disagree, but what do you think?
I mean, it's one of their best results of the season so far. I think Hibs... pretty much, if you look at all the goals they scored, for each one of them, Hibs are totally out of shape. They've been pulled apart by, I don't even know if it's that complicated, the passing moves they put together. But yeah, you see that they're just all over the place. There's no defensive shape and Celtic can pass their way through. I don't know, they played well. What do you think, Slaven?
The very first goal, I really think Hibs could have defended it better, because what I noticed was Hanlon actually called back Dre Wright to pick up Scott Brown, who actually had probably one of his best games this season so far as well. But what he did in moving him out of position was because Alex Gogic had already taken up another Celtic player too, I think it was Ryan Christie, that it left that gap for Callum McGregor to pick up the ball. And when he did, Dre Wright ran out to try and meet him in time, but he just pulled the trigger and it went in. But that space and that gap could have been avoided if Hanlon had just picked up Scott Brown, who was coming into his kind of zonal position anyway. So I think there was moments in that first half that Hibs were just as good as Celtic, which is why I think it was a bit strange to hear Neil Lennon come out post-match and say it was one of the best performances in his two spells as Celtic manager. I think it's pretty bizarre. But nonetheless, Celtic seem to this season be playing a brand of football that isn't so easy on the eye, but they keep winning matches. But there was an impressive performance from David Turnbull. Laura, who you know very well from Motherwell, came into this game in the second half to replace Christie, and looked like he could step into Celtic and really make his mark.
Enter David Turnbull's cheerleader. that's how I feel I've been the last few months.
Well, you did make that really good documentary on him.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of like my wee boy in a way. Just like, kind of let him flee the nest, and I'm still kind of looking out for him and proud of his performance. Yes, sort of feels like it's ridiculous.
Title of the podcast, David Turnbull, my wee boy, E-H-O-Y.
That's what it feels like to be a mum.
What do you think? Are you surprised that that he's came in and looked like he was, you know, a ready-made first 11 player for Celtic?
Not at all surprised. I did see a kind of funny tweet from SPFL Simpsons joking about freezing him so future managers can make the most of him in years to come. This was obviously before he came on at half-time. He's kind of had to be patient the last few weeks, but I think with Ryan Christie going off injured, he came on, and it's the perfect chance for him really to step in and make a mark when something like that does happen. And he looked like he was not one bit out of place either. His technique was there for all to see. He's a class above most in the SPFL, so to see him slotting straight into that side, it's pleasing to see. He's going to be a superstar. I mean, I've said it several times, he's in for a massive future, way bigger than Celtic. This is just the start for him. He set up Elanusi for the goal, and he also had an effort himself from about 30 yards out, which would have been a screamer if it had gone in. It was very impressive. So not bad for his first 45 minutes, I think. I know he's came on the pass for kind of the odd minute here and there, but to kind of get that run, I'm pleased for him. I think he's going to continue to make a mark, and you never know, Scotland squads in the future, it's coming up. It's coming up, keep your eyes out.
Laura, you also said that, you know, quite a few teams that didn't register a shot on target. Hibs were one of those, but I actually thought they were quite dangerous against Celtic in that first half. JJ, do you think it's one of these games where Hibs can just test themselves against another side? I know they came up against Rangers last week and were pretty good up against them with a 2-2 draw. But is this one where they can still come out of the game with plenty of positives?
Purely
in that first half performance.
Well, yeah, but I mean, first half you've got more energy and you go into it and you're not losing. So you've got that sort of hope about you that it's not going to end the way you know it's going to end. And they matched up. So they matched them up to, what am I trying to say here? So like in terms of their system, they pretty much went man-to-man. So they're both playing 5-3-2. And we know that Celtic are playing a 5-3-2 this season because Lennon loves
5-2.
Well, say Hibs were a 5.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's the system 5-3-2, 3-5-2. The shape doesn't, the numbers don't matter. It's they've got three centre backs, they've got two wide players, they've got three midfielders, and the whole point is trying to block each other out. And like you were saying, the whole point with Dre Wright being pulled out for that one bit is if the three's not blocking exactly the space in the middle, because the back three is meant to, and the three in the middle and the two up front is meant to show play wide so that you can then shift over and get the crosses in the way. And they were just left open a couple of times later on. That's how they conceded their goals. They were fine. I mean, you can get points off Celtic if you're very lucky and they're not playing very well and you're Livingston. there's not much you can do. Like Celtic don't lose games, right? Where they conceded 5 goals all season. They won't concede many more for the whole season. Hibs can be pleased with what they're doing. They've been fine this year. They're coming together. It's work in progress. They're going to be top 5, top 4. Yeah.
Obviously, a few more good things for Celtic with Lee Griffiths back in the squad. Didn't come on, though. He was on the bench. Edouard did after Ayeti. Got injured, I think, his hamstring after he scored his goal. I'm really impressed with Ayeti since he's came in. I know he hasn't played a lot of football. But Celtic are going to be looking for a place in the Europa League group stages. They travel to FK Sarajevo on Thursday and Hibernian host Hamilton. Scott Tiffany and Alan Forrest scored within a minute of each other as Livingston saw off St Johnstone 2-0 at the Tony Macaroni, still the best stadium name in the SPFL. St Johnstone just cannot score a goal. And they come up against Celtic, who I don't think they've scored against in about 10 games. So I don't know where St Johnstone are going to find their goals, because Stevie May and Callum Hendry just cannot get it on target even at the moment. But what did you guys think of this game?
It's not looking good for St Johnstone just now, is it? What is it, 2 wins really all bad. Season? It's not. I think the fans are kind of losing patience for Callum Davidson a wee bit. I know it's still early stages in the season, but it's not even like, it looks like the tide's turning for them. They have kind of relegation battle written all over them this season. It's a frustrating time for the St Johnstone fans, I think. But good,
it's hard
good,
though
good
because
win for,
they. Sorry, Laura. I was going to say, it's hard though because St Johnstone have made bad starts in the past and then they come through it. But this is with a brand new manager, of course. We don't know what to expect.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like with Tommy Wright where you kind of knew things were going to come together at some stage for a spell, for a run. But with Callum Davidson, you just didn't really kind of know what you're getting with him in that sense. I know he's obviously been involved behind the scenes before, but to actually step up to the managerial role, just not quite cutting it yet, though. Good win for Livy, though. I think I actually predicted this one in the fantasy. Alan Forrest has been really impressive, I think, so far. I really kind of like the look of him from what I've seen. Absolute spitting
image. Yeah, he took his goal
well. Absolute spitting image of his brother, by the way. See, when you see him from a distance when he's running and he's celebrating, and it's just like, what?
Does he run the same way as James Forrest?
I've not seen him. I've not kind of inspected the way he runs, like down the wing, the way that James runs, kind of with no neck. But
the best way, yeah, the best way I've heard explained is when like you've left your coat hanger on your t-shirt and you're running. That was the best explanation for me.
It was a celebration, though. It was a celebration from this game when I think it was a camera one angle from the main stand, and it was so far away that if you told me that was James Forrest in a Livy top, I would completely believe you. I liked the picture of the other week. Yeah, I know we're kind of going off topic, but it was when Alan and James both came on as a sub when Celtic were playing Livy.
Yeah.
Was it last weekend? It was just a really good picture of them both kind of lining up at the same time to come on. I thought that was kind of an angle you don't really normally see in football, the timing of it.
Yeah, I mean, this was a big result for Livingston because it took them off the bottom of the table. And now they go to face Dundee United, who have been struggling for goals themselves, whereas Livingston have been scoring. They've just been letting in plenty. So it could be an interesting couple of games for Livingston to maybe try and prop themselves up the table. It's not going well for St Mirren either. They're still no win for 5 games now after Nicky Kabamba scored the only goal of the game for Kilmarnock. Kabanga is such a good name. Kabamba just seems to be on a little bit of a good run of form as well. I recently called up to the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is always easy to say, I think. But it seems like he's been a huge focal point for Kilmarnock going forward. JJ.
Yes, well, he's their focal point as the striker in their team. I think The St Mirren versus Killy, there was nothing really to pull these two teams apart whatsoever. The ball was getting mashed into the middle of the pitch, bounced around, went back. That's how Kilmarnock scored their goal. Your pal Jack Anwick launched it. It bounced about a bit. A 1-2 in the wing, and then Kabamba beats his man to the near post. So Jim Goodwin goes nuts at his players as soon as the goal goes in, and trying to work out what they could have done better. And there's little pointers you could say with the defenders, like the centre-back should have been ahead of Kabamba, or they shouldn't have been taken out with a 1-2 in the wing. But it's just the kind of thing that happens now and again when all you're doing is bouncing the ball in the middle of the pitch. There's really no clear identity to either of those teams in that game because they're so kind of similar. But St Mirren, the problem they've got again is that they're creating chances, but they're not scoring. And like the XG again in this game is the problem all of last season, all of this season. XG is 1.4 to St Mirren to 0.7 to Kilmarnock. Mm-hmm. So again, that's not necessarily how the game should go. And we understand XG is how you read it, and football's an unpredictable game, so you can't rely on this. But the underlying stats for St Mirren say that they do not score their goals. Even with my boy, John Obika, up front, they don't take their chances and they let in too many when they shouldn't. These are the sorts of games that, because they're so even. But again, it's another one, like the one we were talking about earlier on, I can't remember who it was because it's so interchangeable. This could be a draw, a win, whoever. If they played this game another 9 times, it'll be a different score each time. They're just so evenly matched, and that's why the bottom of the table's hard to call, but it sort of makes it exciting, but also not, if that makes sense. It's very unpredictable, but it's not great.
Yeah, but the thing is, like the problems for St Mirren last season were scoring goals. And it's just continued into this campaign. The problem is that they brought in Christian Dennis from Notts County, who I think has got like 100 goals in his career so far, and he's scored plenty in League One. But he's injured at the moment. Obika was always the best striking forward for them, but he didn't start in this game. And there's this continuing kind of belief from Jim Goodwin that Junior Marais maybe is, you know, a good player.
But Lee Irwin is signed. He's decent.
Well, Lee Irwin, who is a good player, but if anything, he has to get Dennis back. And the amount, there's not a lack of service in the forward areas for St Mirren. They just don't have that out and out goal scorer. I think if Dennis can come back and get a good run of games and become sharp, then he can be good for St Mirren. But Junior Marais, I think he's only scored 2 goals in over 30 games for St Mirren. But there's this, I know he's quick and he's pacey, but he's not a good finisher. And I just think St Mirren really have to do more in that respect, just like St Johnstone have to too.
St Mirren have brought in like good defensive players as well, though. I mean, they've obviously got Jack Alnick. They've brought in Richard Tate, Marcus Fraser. These are players that know the Premiership well. They're experienced Premiership boys. So they should be kind of... I mean, I know Jim Goodwin did say he's got like a lot of belief in the team he's put together. He should do, considering the names he's brought in. But my God, this game was rubbish on Saturday. I mean, this was another... It's St Mirren and another team that didn't register a single shot on target. It was not a good game. JJ, you're talking about how it's unpredictable, and I really wish it had been a kind of a more exciting, unpredictable game. But I went out a cycle during the second half, and I normally listen to Sports Sound while I'm out a cycle on my Saturdays off, and I had to put it off. It wasn't motivating enough for me, so I had to put it off and put it back on for the kind of last 10 minutes and listen to the end of the games. But I hadn't missed a thing. That's the way it turned out. There was one good save, and that was it. There was nothing else. The guys that were there covering the game were saying it themselves. They were going, this is just not a good game.
That's just because the way the teams are set up. Like they're set up, they're just bouncing in the middle of the pitch. Both are, like, Kilmarnock aren't pressing high, they're sitting off them. So Mirren doing exactly the same thing. They're encouraging the other to open up so they can play through them. They can't. So Mirren cannot play out from the back. They tried it and there's awful passes going in. So then they start hoofing it. And a few passes go around, they can't get near. The Kilmarnock are sat deep, so it goes back to the keeper who launches it, bounces around again. It's boring to watch.
Yeah, and that's the problem when teams that are so evenly placed come up against each other. It's like a fear to kind of to go out and really try and take control of the game because...
I don't know if it's a fear, I don't think they have the ability because they're so evenly matched and there's no one who can really make a huge difference in there. And you can try different systems to try and get around it, but they're both trying to be hard to break down and just win your second ball, and whoever wants it more will win.
I think you're right, JJ, because the point is that Kilmarnock still have genuinely good quality players. Like Chris Burke showed that with his delivery into the box, and that is sometimes all you need to win a game is just one good bit of quality, and that's what proved. And that kind of rounds up the weekend. We're going to be speaking to Stenhouse Muir chairman next, Ian McMenemy, that's his name, about the security of clubs and the fact that no fans are going to be coming back anytime soon.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Just before we get there, though, a little bit of time to get some odds courtesy of Paddy Power, spoken by the wonderful producer Abby. We're going to be talking about Scotland shortly. So who did Paddy Power expect to come up trumps, Scotland or Israel?
Well, they actually have Scotland as the favourites in this one, you'll be glad to hear. Scotland are 10-11 to beat Israel. Israel 3-1, and the draw is 12-5.
I am delighted about that. The Europa League is back. No wins for Aberdeen or Motherwell, so the hopes kind of lie with Celtic and Rangers. How well can they do? Will they qualify for the group stages?
Well, the odds certainly suggest that Celtic will be. They are 1-4 to beat Sarajevo. Sarajevo 8-1, and the draw is 4-1. As for Rangers, they are 11-10 to win, and Galatasaray are 11-5, which means that Rangers are the favourites in this one, which I don't know about you, but that gave me a bit of a surprise.
That's interesting. And what about the top six odds for the Premiership? Quite early to call, but what are Paddy Power saying?
Well, we've been looking at this a little bit, and of course, Celtic Rangers not involved in the odds in the betting on this one. Aberdeen are 1-20, Hibernian are 1-12, and Dundee United still up there as the third favourites in this odds. They are 10-11 to finish in the top six, and Kilmarnock round it off at evens, Motherwell dropping down to 11-10.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. There's no escaping the top story this week. After last week's show, Nicola Sturgeon, alongside Boris Johnson, announced that pilot fixtures to get fans back into grounds will not be happening and may not happen for up to 6 months. So here to help us understand the impact of this and what the state of play is for smaller clubs, we've got Stenhouse Muir chairman Ian McMenemy. Hi Ian, how are you and how are Stenhouse Muir doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm good, all things considered, I suppose, in the world of football. And that's probably the same answer for Stenhouse Muir. All good, as much as possible. Just still sitting, waiting to hear what decision comes out today, tomorrow, next week, because it influences so much of what's going on. So the uncertainty we've had since March in many ways is still there. But apart from that, we're ploughing on, just waiting to get the game back.
I've heard from a few chairmen, particularly down south in England, where when the news came out that all of these restrictions and when it came to sporting events, no fans, and it could be potentially for 6 months, it took them by a huge surprise. What was your immediate reaction?
It was almost, I felt it was a bit of inevitability to the decision. I think it was pushing in that direction now. We saw the figures start to change, the R number that we've been schooled, what it actually means and how it impacts decisions. We knew that was being altered. So I think the direction of travel was quite clear, but it was nonetheless disappointing because we have been planning for some time that there would be a natural progression of things in terms of the testing, how much you'd have to do in terms of testing, and then small scale events, letting fans back in. So we felt that would be the progression, and when it was confirmed more or less that that's probably it for the foreseeable future, it was quite devastating, to be honest.
If test events have done quite well so far, what's holding it back from being doing more of them? I know obviously there's our number going up and things, but if they know they can be safe, is there not a way they could do more of them? Is it, how do you take that as a chairman?
Yeah, I mean, I find it a little bit hard to take because I did a bit the other night on BBC News TV at night, and they put out the kind of bit of footage from it where I'd said I didn't think there was a lot of science behind the reasons. And of course, the first couple of tweets came back with people trying to accuse me of being a science denier or something like that. But it's not in the slightest, not what I was saying. What the point I was really making was, right now, despite all the changes that have come in place, and despite the news that we can't have fans back anytime soon, despite that, under the rules, and it's on the Scottish Government's page, you're still allowed to have outdoor live events for up to 200 people. That's still taking place right now. So if it's a pop concert or something else, that can happen right now. So we have the strange situation where Cowdenbeath, you know, who are known for having stock cars as well as a football pitch in their ground, you know, people could go and watch stock cars on a Saturday morning, 200 of them sitting in the same seats in the stadium. And then the minute the football players come out, somehow that's unsafe. You can't stand in the stadium or sit in the stadium anymore. So I just can't understand the science behind sorts of decisions like that. So I think the problem is they've lumped certain sports together, football and rugby, have been lumped together, and perhaps maybe we're, you know, it's our own fault for going in as early as we did to try and, you know, negotiate with government sooner to try and get the game opened up. But I think they're treating all clubs as though we're 45,000 seater stadiums with all the issues that would be on public transport and queuing to get into turnstiles and just the sea of people that can be in a street going back and forth. So I think they're thinking maybe that's the case. Maybe there's a bit kind of needing to kind of recheck in terms of the different sizes, different divisions would maybe make a bit of a difference.
Do you think that the SPFL and the SFA are doing enough to fight the corner of Scottish football against the government just now?
If you asked me that a week ago, I probably would have said absolutely no straight away. But in the last week, I'm certainly more aware of what they've been doing over the last week in terms of trying to speak to government to try and see if they can either access funding, perhaps through the UK government, what they've promised, but also in some of the other discussions they've had. So they have had some discussions, but I definitely, overall, I think there's been a lack of direction from the football authorities at every stage, every step of the way, even in terms of all the various documents we've had to provide to get going again. We've got, you know, really thick documents that were, you know, returned to training, and then there was return to training with contact, then there was return to training with contact leading to phase four, and now we're on return to play. And every club has went off and did their own guide when thinking surely lots of things in there would be fairly standard. Just tell us what standards we have to meet, and if we can meet them, then we can confirm that, and if we can't meet them, then we need to find out what we can do to make the standards. But it just seemed to be that we've all had to go through a very long process ourselves. So I think in a number of ways, I think we could have had better support from our authorities.
We've heard down in England particularly that Premier League clubs might be helping clubs in the lower divisions in England. And there's talk of a potential financial package from the government to help clubs in the National League level in tiers 5 and 6. Have you heard anything similar happening up in Scotland at all?
Yeah, I mean, on the first part, I can't see any Premiership clubs particularly dipping their hands into their pocket. But I mean, I say that, and I know that Ross County actually offered to cover the cost of a couple of smaller clubs that were in their division in the Betfred Cup, which was a fantastic gesture. But I know historically, in terms of any sort of help in changing the way the funds are distributed within the league, you know, I was fighting for that back in March when this all happened, that we need to perhaps just treat this as something different, and it fell on deaf ears. And even the money that came from the benefactor that stepped forward, he offered £50,000 to all clubs. We hoped maybe one or two clubs who that didn't mean that much to them at the top of the tables would maybe say, well, okay, we'll let that go back into lower league clubs. But they didn't. A lot of them took that money and then gave it away to charity, which was an odd thing to do. But I don't think the money will come from there. Whether or not money comes from government, I don't think Scottish government holds Scottish football in very high regard, to be honest. And I think that's Scottish football's problem. They just haven't engaged. And when they have engaged, it's been hostile, and it's been pointing the finger at Scottish government, asking them for to do things, sort out, you know, fan behaviour issues and things like that, rather than Scottish football getting its own house in order. So I don't think the stock is particularly good there. So perhaps there's maybe more of a chance of it coming from the Westminster government. And I do hear how much substance there is to this or not, but I did hear just today that maybe sometime this week there will be some sort of news or decision coming out of Westminster on whether or not there will be funding available and how that might be distributed, if at all available. So maybe we'll know in a few days just what might be there for football.
That'd be good if the Scottish Government was to help us out as well in that sense. Ian, just to kind of take away from the money side of things just now, see, in terms of testing, we're seeing Premiership teams just now obviously going through a strict testing regime once a week, but the lower leagues, it's not mandatory. What's your take on that? Do you think it should be?
I don't. It's now the Premiership clubs that are out of step now with everybody else, with society. They wanted to go early. They wanted to go when science was telling the country, you're in lockdown, you can't go out and do anything. And football wanted to go early. So they came up with a plan that would allow them to do that. And that was the twice a week testing. So that's the price they had to pay for getting going again. We talked about it in the lower divisions, and we felt just couldn't afford the cost to that, and we weren't quite sure if it was going to be sustainable or not in terms of, you know, where the whole virus was going to go. So we made the decision not to do that. We made the decision to wait until the Scottish Government said, okay, that's it, contact sport is now back. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the government did just that. They came forward and said, okay, organised sport can now resume. It can now be full contact. You can now be coached up to 30 people on the same pitch, as long as it's outdoors, with certain standards and guidance in place. So we unlocked with the rest of society. So really, the Premiership teams now don't have to test, but they're choosing to do so because they see that as a bit of an added safety net. So I say it's us now that's in step with everybody else. So I think to try and put testing in would be an odd thing to do because it would go against the rest of sport. Where I do think there was a conflict was when teams that aren't testing are coming up against a team that was testing. And I did raise this a number of weeks ago as being two bubbles that would potentially collide. They've fixed that, and I think they've done a good job of fixing it. They've now said that lower league clubs, if you do come up against a team that's testing, then the lower league club will have to test at their own expense. And I fully accept that because I accept that the Premiership clubs are in a different bubble. So we've got no issues with when we do play in the Betfred Cup. We've got Livingston coming up in November, and we'll be testing into the same standards that Livingston tested when it comes to that. So I've got no problems with that, but I don't see the need overall, unless Scottish Government changes its position, I don't see the need for lower league clubs to test.
Do you, or would you say it's inevitable that we'll lose clubs because of lockdown?
I would say it's a very good chance we will. I know speaking to clubs back in March when this all happened, there was clubs that had very little money then because, of course, they were getting towards the end of the season. And, you know, you spend money throughout your season. Quite often your sponsorship money will come in at the start and, you know, you can spend that as you go through the season. Then you hit the end of the season, then you rebuild for the next season. Well, of course, we hit the end of the season and there was no real chance to rebuild financially. We haven't really been in that position. So finances weren't great in March and haven't been great since. We're now quite sure we're going into the season without supporters. And I heard a good analogy of that. Somebody said it's like saying to the pubs, okay, you're free to open up now, but you just can't have any customers in. How sustainable a model is that for a pub? So how sustainable is that for football? We've been told, okay, yeah, you can now play again, but you can't have any of your customers in through the gate. So it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think it will potentially, you know, put some clubs over the edge. And that would be horrible. That'd be a terrible, you know, thing to happen that we've got so far, and we've managed to really fight the tide as right through this whole period. We've done some pretty, you know, interesting things in terms of new deals with players and new contracts, and we've went out there trying to find new ways of making money, like live streaming, and all these things we've tried to put in place. So we haven't just sat on our laurels and let things happen to us. We've tried to innovate and we've tried to go off and find new things to do. So it would be pretty devastating if at the end of that we somehow get another kick and we lose a couple of our fellow clubs.
Thanks for being so honest, Ian. I really hope that we can get all clubs at all levels back competing again, and especially yourselves. But thanks a lot for joining us, and hope to speak to you sometime soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Ian McMenemy there, Stenhouse Muir chairman. Laura, what's the word been around Motherwell and what they're doing at the moment? Obviously, I know they've got a streaming service, but just what is the impact of not having even 300 fans in the ground?
No, just the thought of even having 300 just now would be an absolute luxury. I mean, what are we missing? I mean, we're missing the atmosphere for a start, the tempo of the game, the money as well is massive. I mean, you look at our game on Sunday against Rangers. Now, I don't know money to the penny, but I can talk in ballpark. In terms of the away crowd that we would have let in, it's obviously one of our biggest ones of the entire season. Is obviously when Celtic Rangers come, we've got a stand of 4,000 for the away end, and we would have made around the £100,000 mark in terms of away tickets alone being sold. So obviously that's a massive payday that we've missed out on. And just coincidentally, we've also missed out on the money in terms of normally we've got a streaming service like most teams in the Premiership, and we weren't able to stream this one to our pay-per-view audience yesterday because it was a Sky game. So again, it's obviously nowhere near in terms of money of fans coming into the grounds, but every little bit counts. So that's still a kind of large chunk that we also missed out on in that sense. So it's definitely punishing us in that sense. Even if we were to get, I mean, you're looking at, I think a lot of the argument for getting fans back in, as Ian was talking about, is they're clumping everyone together, and I think a lot of people are just seeing Celtic and Rangers and going, that's a full stadium, that's 50,000, that's 60,000 people, how do we cope with that? But when you look at the smaller teams that don't bring in sellout crowds week in, week out, it's a lot more possible for us to bring in a lot, like most of our season tickets. I mean, if you look at we've got around 4,000 season ticket holders, and our stadium holds 14,000 people. And obviously in the early days of letting fans back in, they're not going to have away crowds, so we would get to make use of our biggest stand, which is the away end. As I say, it holds 4,000 alone. So if even the government allowed us to have 30% capacity, we would be able to get in all our season ticket holders, which would be massive for us.
Do you think there's a perception from the government that they just don't trust football fans?
There's definitely issues there where we are kind of, I think I'm not the only one that's ever said that we're treated differently to the likes of rugby fans, for example. I think you only have to look at the kind of alcoholic games argument for that one. But I feel as though we're kind of last in line just now. There's been a lot of talk of, you know, well, how come we can go to restaurants and pubs and cinemas? And I'm very much not of the argument of, well, that shouldn't be happening. I very much agree that that should be happening right now, but I don't see why we're not counted in a similar sense. We're an entertainment industry, yes, but we're also one of the biggest industries in terms of making money in the whole of Scotland. It's not just an entertainment business, it's an industry where it has thousands and thousands of people that rely on this for their jobs. So it should be taken a kind of a lot more seriously in terms of bringing fans back in. I think Ian made a very good point of, you wouldn't open up a restaurant and make food and not have people come in and sit down and eat the food. You don't have customers. So why is it not similar for football? Why are we playing football and not allowing anyone to be in when it's an outdoor environment, which is a lot safer than indoors? Everyone is willing to wear masks, and it's going to be so heavily policed. I mean, we talked about last week the week before about the Aberdeen test event. It looked brutal. It looked horribly policed in the sense of it killed the atmosphere, but at the same time it's a start, and I think we're all willing to just kind of get this ball rolling. And if it has to be a kind of a horrible first kind of few games or first few weeks or months or whatever, but as long as it just gets started, everyone just wants to kind of get to the next step. Now every other industry is getting to the next step. Why is football not the same?
Well said, Laura. We'll keep eyes on this, and hopefully things can change very, very soon. So our very good manager, Steve Clarke, is set to name his very good Scotland squad at 2:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And this is a bit of a kind of funny one. I noticed it in the week, but have you guys seen this, that FIFA have changed the rules on eligibility for performing for your national team?
No.
So I read... Yeah. So,
so you I read... You just told us FIFA, off air. Yeah.
So the FIFA Congress... met last week and voted to pass a rule change regarding eligibility for national teams. And the biggest change was that players are no longer tied to a national team on the basis of a single appearance when they were younger. I think it's like up to the age of 21. So you can switch national teams provided that you are eligible to represent a second country at the time they first played for their first country. Still with me? Even if they had played in an official competition for the first nation. So this applies as long as they have played no more than 3 matches, which includes friendlies. None of the matches were in the final tournament of the FIFA World Cup or Confederation competition, and they all happened before the player turned 21. Yeah, so there you go. Possibly might open the doors for a few other players for Scotland.
No!
You don't sound like a fan, Laura.
This rule is awful. For anyone who can't see me right now, I'm hitting my head off a wall at how bad this rule is.
Why don't you like it?
Oh my God, well, if anyone knows me and kind of what I've always said about football is, I hate when players can't pick a nationality. I think a lot of problems would be solved if when you signed your first professional contract at whatever age, what, 16, 17, you stated your nationality and you were in time there. And
oh my God, that's... But what... Some people sign their first professional contracts at, like, 16 years old.
Yeah, did you not know when you were 16 that you were Scottish?
Well, yeah.
Of course you did. Of course you did. Because you're not stupid when you're 16. I know you're young, but you're not stupid.
But it's not being stupid anymore, is it? It's identity is a lot of the problems. Like, it could be... There's a lot of players who will say they'll play for one team and then they get a couple of games and then suddenly they realise they're not really going to get in that team ever and they could go and play for that. Say you've got dual nationality and your mum is from one place, your dad's from another.
No,
you're
Jesus,
born in one place.
No.
But why people have different... Not everyone's got a clear cut, born in Scotland, I am Scottish. Some people have born in one continent and the other one's in another continent. So they have completely split allegiances. They're not getting a game for one of them. They can play for the other.
And a lot of players go, oh, I've got a Scottish granny who once drove through Dumfries, and you know what? I'm not good enough to play for England, but I'll hold off for a Scotland call-up. It's so insulting.
Who was that?
I don't want a player who does that. Oh, come on, it's happened so many times in the past. Danny Fox, thank you. There's so many that have done that. They're not good enough for an English call-up, so they hold off for a Scotland call-up because it's like...
What do you think Lyndon Dykes did?
I mean, this is why we talked about it in weeks past, and I was never really too comfortable with it. And like, if you're eligible, then fine, but stick to one nation. I mean, it's bad enough you can switch after a friendly, but now after competitive games, that is so insulting. Imagine we had a player who played 3 competitive games for Scotland, got us to like the playoffs, or even got us to the like to qualify for a tournament. Imagine a player played in the Euro playoffs coming up this month and next month, qualified for Euro 2020. And then he just buggered off to England because they suddenly showed interest in him. I'm sorry, but no,
yeah, maybe
thank
Scott
you.
McTominay might have got stolen that way with the new rule change, but he's played enough games for Scotland now. And let's look at the games that are coming up because we've got Israel on the 8th of October at Hampden, so we're at home for that one. Then we've got our Nations League group, and we've got Slovakia 3 days after Israel, so on the 11th of October, and then we've got Czech Republic coming back, probably with a much stronger side. That's on the 14th of October. But let's move on from Scotland chat, because I think Laura's head's going to explode. So Fantasy Football Scotland chat now. A lot of moves, I think, on your side, JJ?
Not this week, because I did all my transfers last week with not a wild card. I already used that. I used up lots of points. Anyway, it all paid off. My brave, brave, brave decision. What a brave boy. And it's paying off now a little bit. Get your defenders as captains. That's a secret.
So you didn't get minus points this week?
Nope, because I didn't make any more transfers this week.
Oh, man. Well, I had a bit of a shocker. I'm floating back down the league again. I'm back third. I forgot to put... I'm pretty sure I did. But I'm pretty sure I put McCrory and Devlin in my side. So that would have got me like 14 points. Laura, how the hell did you get like 75 points or something like that? You're absolutely running away with it now, and
I'm
hate
sorry,
you for
I'm
it.
Just I'm just kind of good at this game. I put Lauren Shankland in this week. He was cheaper this week than he was at the start of the season when I made the mistake of putting an injured Lauren Shankland. I'm more with the game now. I put him in and he scored a goal for me, so that was good. I also put Portis on a bench because I knew he was going to concede against Celtic, so I didn't lose points there.
And you made the wise move of captaining Tavernier. 28 points, my God.
I know.
I said earlier, he's having the season of his life right now. Probably one to get in if you can.
A penalty-taking defender, at least for one of the Old Firm teams, you can't really scoff at that in terms of fantasy. is the secret.
Well, I'm still going to come for you, Laura. I'm going to get better at this.
I'm waiting, Andrew.
Well, I think on that note, let's call the show. Thanks for listening all the way through it. Very impressive. We'll be back next week for more, but until then, keep listening to the Little Kicks, because they're a great wee band, and keep safe and keep it totally. Cheerio.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, listener. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, here to tell you why you need to be listening to The Totally Football League Show, but apparently I've only got 30 seconds to do so. Reason one, we cover the most football of anyone. That's 72 clubs in total. Reason two, our panellists played actual football in the EFL. Whoa. And reason three, our music sounds like George Clooney is organising a heist. Oh, did I mention that we're now a bigger show than ever before, going out twice a week? Now that's more commitment to the EFL than even Sam Parkin gave as a player. How often are the games coming, Sam?
Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday.
That's the Totally Football League show, every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. Did I do it?
Muddy Knees Media.